If you will date once a month or more, you will see, and this is Brad Wilcox's research, he says that you will get a 15% boost in like communication, not likely to divorce, sexual intimacy, overall happiness, all those things.
Welcome to Family Life Today, where we want to help you pursue the relationships that matter most. I'm Ann Wilson.
And I'm Dave Wilson, and you can find us at familylifetoday.com. This is Family Life Today.
We've been talking with Arlene Pellicane about her book, Making Marriage Easier.
You know, you go into You Can Say Anything. And you read that and you're like, well, no, I really can't.
You can in the Pellicane household.
Well, tell us about
electrolysis.
That was hilarious.
My husband, James, he is a very unusual person. So when we were very seriously dating, so we're falling in love, we are in graduate school, like it's kind of his first serious girlfriend, right? And he's just thinking through this, like, I really want to tell her something, but I don't know if I can. So we're on this date and he says to me, I want to ask you a question, but I just don't know how to say it. And I'm thinking, oh, I hope this is not the proposal. Like, this would be so lame if this was the proposal. And I say, you can tell me anything, baby. And he's like, well, you have these hairs on your upper lip. And I'm wondering if you've ever considered electrolysis. And that is just the last thing I would have ever thought anyone would say to me. And I was like, well, you know, I've never thought of that before. And look at the time. I have to go. And I was just so awkward. And I went back home and I went to the bathroom and I looked in the mirror, Dave, and this hair that had been there all my life, all of a sudden I was like, oh my word, I have like a mustache. Oh my word, this is so embarrassing.
You never saw it before.
I never noticed it in my whole life. I'm just like, it's fuzzy. Like, big deal. It's fuzzy. I'm not like a spa girl. You know, I don't do my nails. I don't go out and do all these things. So I was just like, yeah. So I get the phone book. Yellow pages, laser, 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 laser. And I go to the laser place and I literally call and get 3 sessions to zap my lip. At that time, it was like a zap and it like hurt. I think it's painless now, but it hurt. And when I did all these things, we did not get into a fight. I actually zapped my lip and got rid of the hairs on my lip. And James was like, oh my word, I think I could marry this girl because now she doesn't have hair on her lip. And now I know I really could tell her anything. And in his defense, because people just go wild, right? Like, I cannot believe that your husband would dare, like your boyfriend, would, how dare he say to you, you should go get some electrolysis? Like, how dare he? And in his mind, he tells me, you know, I'm thinking about asking you to marry me. And that means we are going to make big decisions together. Like, what are we going to do with the money? Like, where are we going to live? How many children are we going to have? These are big decisions. And if I cannot talk to you about the hair on your lip, like, obviously, this is not going to work. So it was like so funny. And really, when our spouse tells us something that's so awkward and whatever, but there's that hint of truth. I mean, I really did have hair on my lip. And it really did help me to get electrolysis. So again, we're looping back to humility.
Yeah.
Like the ability.
That's what I was going
to
say.
To be able to be like, you know what?
I received it.
I guess I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it is something we can learn. Like if naturally you're very defensive and you're easily offended, like this is something you can learn to be like, you know what, God, help me to be love covers a multitude of sins. So help me to be more gracious. Help me to just not be so offendable. Because we are living in times where it's like you have the right to be offended. In fact, if you are living unoffended, then you must be not looking at something. You know, you're just pie in the sky. You know, we're just told like you got to be offended about something. And for us to realize that's not a fun way to live, and especially not in a marriage.
But can you say anything? Like if that conversation had been, and again, this is before you're married.
Yeah.
If it had been, you need to lose 50 pounds.
Yeah, yeah.
Or 25 pounds.
Yes.
Is that any different? I mean, to you, it'd probably been okay. A lot of people would be like, the hair on my face or talking about my weight.
We are very protective about our appearance and those things. And there is an openness. And it's hard.
Yeah.
Like, we still have those conversations.
Sure you
like,
do.
James and I still have these kinds of conversations.
Every marriage does.
And in the moment, a lot of times what I will do is I will just be like, I cannot believe we're talking about this, you know, something like that. Like, I cannot believe, like, do you not know that I'm doing so much better than X, Y, and Z amount of people out there, right? That's kind of how we are, that we think like, I'm doing so good and I can't believe you're not seeing that I'm doing so good. Mm. And so sometimes you just draw away for a little bit. And by a little bit, I mean, you know, an hour. I'm not talking about, 6 months or anything, but you just say, Lord, like, just soften my heart towards this. Help my spouse to see me, like, to be kind to me, like, whatever it is, like, pray about it. Whatever's happening is pray. And if you're the one presenting the hard truth, you know, when he told me about the lip and when he tells me about the pounds or anything like that, let's say, he's not saying it in a snobby, snarky way. Like, he's trying to be as humble as possible.
It sounds like he's speaking the truth
in love. He's trying his best to speak the truth in love.
Have you ever had to say anything to him about the hair on his forehead or the hair under his armpit? I don't know.
Exactly.
Anything that you've had to call out?
Not the hair. He takes care of his own hair. He just shaves that stuff all off. But yeah, when there are things to say, then it's usually something that would really help me would be if you would XYZ is usually how I say it. And then he is actually receptive to that. And that is what gives that nice give and take of that we can talk about these things together. So maybe you're listening and you're the spouse that's like, you know, like, no, you cannot tell me things. Then it's our cue, like, hey, let's be that open, safe spouse that you could tell me things. If you're the one that's like always spouting all the corrections, then, hey, maybe it's time to, you know, don't spout so much corrections and make sure that you do have that ratio, John Gottman's ratio of five positive things to one negative thing. Like, you've got to have a big storage of positive things towards your spouse in order to say anything, or else that mean thing you say really does, it's not working. So you got to have that stream. So start with that stream and then bring up, you know, and with prayer, like, God, soften our hearts towards this. And always the point is we want to grow closer together as a couple. And I'm doing this for your good, our good, not like it's just what I want. You got to do it my way. Like, that doesn't usually go over well, but this is good for both of us.
You talk about it in the terms of a dragon, a small dragon.
Yeah.
Keep it. Talk about that. Like, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, there was a book. There is a real dragon in this book. And the little boy's like, look, Mom, there's a dragon. And it's this little cute dragon. But she's like, there's no such thing as dragons. And then as the book continues, the dragon gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And she keeps saying, there's no such thing as dragons, until it gets so big that it drags off the house and all this. And finally she says, oh yeah, I guess there is such a thing as a dragon. And once she acknowledges that dragon, it goes boop right back down to the little tiny size.
Mm.
And the idea is sometimes, you know, the other one of the spouses is saying, hey, we have this problem. And the other spouse is like, we don't have a problem. We're fine. We're fine. And this problem is just so huge because you will just not acknowledge the problem.
Mm.
But once that spouse says, yeah, we do have a problem, then all of a sudden that huge dragon that you think will just take you down gets right back to its size. In a size you can manage, where both of you can acknowledge, hey, this is something we got to work on.
I mean, that was Dave and I, because I would say, you're not home. You're never home. And he would say, I am home. I'm totally home. So I'm saying, we've got this humongous dragon. He goes, no, we don't.
Yeah.
And so even if you don't think there's a dragon, if your spouse is saying there is one, there is one.
There is one.
Yeah.
And you gotta deal with it. I mean, there are, like, untouchables for couples. And you mentioned them. Like, how does a couple talk about sex?
Yes.
Pornography.
I mean, there's a whole list.
Yeah, I loved your list. And let me ask you as a listener, are these things hard for you to talk about? Sex, pornography, opposite sex friends, video gaming, phone use, unhealthy weights, spiritual compatibility, politics, in-laws and extended family, death. We all have our issues and topics that we kind of lean away from because there will be a conflict. How do you and James enter into that and talk to the person that's maybe like, this is super hard for me to even bring it up because they're so defensive? How do we start?
I think asking questions of the other person. So let's say you're the person who wants to talk about it. Because if you're the person who does not want to talk about it, you're not doing anything. You're just going to sit there, right?
You're avoiding.
But if you're the person that wants to talk about it, then asking questions that are calibrated questions that you've thought about and that you might start with, let's, you know, like, hey, I've been thinking about our money or our sex life, or I'm concerned about pornography. And I know this may be very awkward, but we need to talk about it. Mm. And then asking questions. It's hard. It's awkward. So put yourself in the other person's shoes.
That's good.
And start with some accusation of yourself. Like, hey, I know this is going to be awkward. You're going to think I'm the nosy wife. You're going to think I'm a too strong of a husband, but I care about you too much. I want to have this conversation. Do you think we could? You know, and most people will be like, okay. And then make it easy. I think the first time you ask it, like, don't ask like the super, super hard thing and just start there. And then maybe that's all you can handle right then. And that's fine. And then you kind of build on that. Mm. But I think sex is a big one. That's
Me
the
too.
Big one in our marriage. And I think in a lot of marriages,
yeah.
But just the ability to have these kinds of talks is really huge.
Yeah.
'Cause usually if you're open to communication about it, it's going to get better.
And you're right. If we don't talk about it, it can just grow in our heads.
The dragon.
It's the dragon gets bigger and bigger. But to bring it into the light, to talk to your spouse about it, that's a win, even though it can be weird and awkward and difficult.
And that helped you to realize this is a decision to make sex part of your regular rhythm of marriage. Because I used to think like, oh, well, that's not good. I have to like feel like it. But then I realized you can decide to do this just like you decide to pick up the kids and smile when they get in the car, even when you don't feel like it. Like you can decide I'm going to be happy. You know what I mean? And then being receptive, you become happy. So you might not start that way, but then you do. So it is this good thing of, okay, this is something worth talking about and worth scheduling. I remember hearing very early in our marriage, if couples who have kids who do not schedule sex, do not have sex. And that really helped me to realize we have to schedule this just like you schedule other things.
Yes. And before we got married, I like, that's so awful. Like,
right.
How depressing is that?
How
you
awful.
Have to schedule
it's like
it?
A calendar, like a doctor's appointment or something.
Yeah. Get out your calendar. That's, and you have to.
Yes.
Yeah, that's so good.
Well, you know, I'm listening right now thinking there's a wife or a husband or both listening. And I just want to say to you, this conversation about sex or pornography or money.
Yeah.
It takes courage sometimes because you're afraid to go there. Maybe it's not gone well before when you tried to bring it up. I just want to encourage you, pray.
Yes, pray first.
And I, you know, the dragon idea, dragons, if they're going to destroy you, have to be attacked. You can't just like, oh, you got to go after
them. You don't want to learn to live with this.
Yeah. So it's like, I would encourage you tonight to say, okay, God, give me the courage. I got to bring this up. Bring it up tenderly and gently.
Yeah.
I've said many times, I can preach or be on a stage and talk about sex with thousands of people, but to go in a kitchen or a bedroom and say, hey, can we talk about it? It's harder. It's intimate, you know, and this isn't intimate. It looks intimate, like, wow, he's being vulnerable talking to all these people, but I don't know you. We're not going to talk about it later, but this is our life, and that's a scary thing. That takes courage, but I love your principle. You can say, you can talk about anything. Do it.
Yeah.
Hey, in the same one, play by the rules, you have the whole thing about kids.
Oh, I think this is huge.
We gotta have a conversation about that because kids, they... I saw somebody on YouTube or some marriage couple talking, and they used this visual. And they had a couple kids on stage with them, and they were standing, the husband and wife were standing talking to the audience, and they separated and brought the kids and put them right in between them and stood in a line. And they said, this should not be your marriage. And then they put the kids behind them. They put the husband and wife together, and they said, this should be your marriage.
That's
Don't
good.
Let them become behind you. They're important. But when they come in between you and your wife, like they're more important than the husband or the wife, you're going to have problems. They need to be following you. You need to be leading them. Is that true?
Oh, that's so good and so true.
Yeah.
Right?
It's so hard for me.
Yeah. Because,
and especially I've
and
seen-
And now grandkids.
In blended families too, if kids have gone through a divorce, I think it's really easy for a mom or a dad, like I want to protect my kids.
Yes.
And make them feel secure of this new marriage. And
totally.
So it's really easier even for them. And it feels right to protect my kids.
Yes.
And there is some truth to that. But to make your marriage a priority, it's not always easy.
Yes. Like we'll give lip service. Like, oh yeah, my marriage, it's important. It's a priority. Yes. But when it all comes down to it, right? Who in your family do you treat the best? Oh my goodness. I'd have to be like, oh, my youngest daughter, Lucy, the one that's living at home with us. And so I'm having to retool and be like, I should be treating James the best because, you know, I'll think about it when kids come into the picture, when they're babies, the whole world revolves around them. And it should, because the baby needs you to be alive. But soon after, the baby doesn't need you to be alive and you need to get back to normal. Mm. But most of us, especially in our culture today, we do not get back to normal. We are still child-centered. Everything's about the kid. The vacation's about the kid. Where we eat is about the kid. Our rhythms, how we spend our time, it's all about the kids. And if we do that, well, no wonder the graying of divorce is happening, that kids leave and then mom and dad look at each other because they became mom and dad. They weren't even husband and wife anymore. It's like the roles flipped. And instead of being husband, wife, mom, dad, they became just like mom and dad. And that was lost. Mm. So it's really important, like, to keep dating. So research says even if you just date once a month, you're doing better, because 50% of couples go out like 3 or 4 times a year.
Wow.
Is that what the stats are?
A year, yes. It's crazy. So if you will date once a month or more, you will see, and this is Brad Wilcox's research out of the marriage studies. He says that you will get a 15% boost in, like, communication, not likely to divorce, sexual intimacy, overall happiness, all those things. So it is this idea of, like, hey, I can leave the kids with the babysitter. I can leave the kids with mom and dad, whatever that trusted person is. And I will go out with my spouse. My husband and I have not done this perfectly, for sure, but we did, like, that yearly getaway, you know, where you just 24 hours, you know, I live in San Diego, so it's super easy. You just have to go downtown 24 hours. And that 24 hours just shifts everything, because you remember, like, oh my goodness, we are a couple.
Yeah. I like you so much.
Like, it's kind of fun to just be us, like, not to have to worry about where the kids are and what they're doing. And, you know, now, we still do it. And my daughter, Lucy, who is a sophomore in high school, was so cute, because she was, like, as excited as we were. It was weird. I didn't realize that. She was like, Mom, you guys are going on your little date tomorrow. I'm so excited for you guys. And I was like, this is funny. Like, she was almost more excited than me, because I was thinking, like, I got to pack my bag, I got to do these things, you know. And she was, and then I realized, like, our kids, it's so healthy for them.
Yeah.
When they see, like, mom and dad love each other, they enjoy being together, they're going to have a little getaway, they're excited that you're going to do this. So it was like, this is amazing. So, really, the service you can do for your children by loving your spouse is huge.
Yeah.
And I call it the tennis test. You know, I will sit in a car and wait an hour for my girls to come out of tennis practice, right? When they were both in tennis in high school. I'll just sit in the car. They say, Mom, you know, it's running late. Fine, no problem. Sit in the car, I'll read a book, no problem. But if my husband told me to pick me up at 5 o'clock.
That's so good,
Arlene. And then texted me, like, oh, it's running late, I'll be out in an hour. I'd be like, an hour? Like, lift home. Do you not know how much I have to do? And I'd be so mad.
That is so true.
And then it's just like, why would I do that so much for my girl so easily, but not for my husband?
Why?
So, I mean, it is a thing.
Why is it like
that? We love our kids so much.
We love our kids.
Crazy about them.
It's like a covenantal love with our kids. It is. It's just easy. You love them unconditionally.
We are in a marriage covenant.
That's what I'm saying. This one is just an easy, I love you unconditionally. This one, man, it should be just like that.
Yeah, like, we're both adults.
Yes.
You know, you should take care of yourself.
We have expectations.
But I'll take care of these kids and do all these extra things for them.
It's crazy. Wow. Well, I think this is a really good conversation to have with your spouse. And I love that you get into this of, like, here's something you can ask your spouse. Like, in what ways are we a child-centric home? Are there any changes we need to make? As a listener, I hope that you'll ask your husband this, or ask your wife this. Are we a child-centric home? And don't get defensive, because I know Dave's already going to say, like, no, we're a grandchild-centric home. I know that he'll say that. And my thought is,
how do you not get defensive? Because you've gotten defensive.
I'm like, and I have my, like, well, I'm with you all the time. I travel with you. We work together. We're with each other constantly. And we're not with them as much. So I need to pray, like, if your husband comes to you or your wife, hey, I have something I really want to talk about that may not be easy, but here's what I've been feeling lately. And even to say, like, and maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Even to say that.
Yes, I like
humble,
that.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm feeling like, am I as important? Mm-hmm. I think it's just a great question. And your spouse might get defensive, but don't get discouraged.
They will get defensive. I've been there. I get defensive.
Don't get discouraged, because even if they react instead of respond, God is still working. When I walk away, I can hear the whisper of the Holy Spirit convicting me. I can feel it. Can't you?
Yes, yes. And a lot of times it's the mom. A lot of times it's we moms that are like, oh, but Junior and this and this, and they have to be in 10 things. And it could be a small, simple solution of, hey, you guys have to pick the same activity. We cannot run her all around town. You know, we have three kids. They all played the piano. They all did martial arts.
We did that too.
And that was James. He was like, we cannot run all around creation. They have to just do one thing.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
That's really smart.
Okay, we've only talked about one decision.
I mean, a long way to go, don't we?
We could keep going, too, because there's even more things. But the second one is what? Give thanks?
What's that look like? Every day.
Every day.
So instead of being like, oh, I'm going to look for all the deficiencies, say, no, I'm going to thank God. And if you live in your marriage in a spirit of thanksgiving, you were thankful when you met him or her, right? You were just like, oh my word, I cannot believe I found this person, like a treasure. And you were so thankful.
You see all the great
things. You're so, so thankful. And so to keep that going, and it's the will of God. Like all of us, you know, we think many times, God, what do you want me to do in my life? Like, I want to follow your will. I want to follow your will. But it's right there in the Bible to rejoice and to give thanks and to pray. And so when we give thanks for our spouse, it changes everything. And you'll find what you are looking for. So if you're looking for ways to be grateful, you'll find it.
Mm. And you sort of have to look.
You have to look.
Because like you said, at the beginning, you see it. It's right there. You love it. And then you see all the negative.
Yes.
You see all the weakness. You get hurt. They don't show up. They may break a vow or a promise, and you are really hurt. And so you're like, okay, be thankful. How do you get back to that?
Yeah, so you think Job, though he slay me, yet I will praise him, mm-hmm. right? So it is this very, like, God, if there's nothing I can be thankful for in this moment for my spouse and where we are, I'm just going to be thankful that you are with me in the dark, that you're going to get us through this. You know, if couples will stick it out through the hard times, you know, stick out that 3, 4, 5 year period that's so hard, research says that they're going to find happiness on the other side. They're not going to stay stuck forever. And I think Thanksgiving is really a key way to get out of that. Thanking God. God, I thank you for the way that you're working. And you know, you just say, I thank you. He got out of bed. And he got himself to work. A lot of men don't do that. So I'm going to thank you for that. Or I thank you, God. She made a dinner. It was hardly edible, but it'll nourish me and I'll get through the day. You know, whatever. Just you start thanking God for things, small things, and write them down if you're having a trouble. You know, my husband, one week he wrote down each day, like one thing for each day. And then he gave it to me and he showed me this list. You know, Monday, you take Lucy to school and you're cheerful when you do that. Tuesday, when I come home, you have dinner waiting for me. And he just had written down these little things that he had noticed. So like you're saying, Dave, it's the effort of noticing. And can you imagine if you actually wrote it down and then you actually showed it to your spouse, and it's pretty easy. Like that's not hard to do. You just take a little post-it note, Monday, this, you smelled good. Tuesday, you know, it doesn't matter. It's like, and then you give it to them at the end of the week, say, I appreciate you. And that could start just turning the ship on this whole complaining. I mean, you all have a friend that is very negative and very complaining. And who wants to be with this negative, complaining person? Yeah. Nobody.
That's what I was going to ask you. Yeah. When you saw that list, were you motivated to be even more like that?
Yeah.
Versus if you saw a list or if your husband or your wife just said, hey, here's what you did wrong today. That is the most demotivating, isn't it?
Yes. Right. Yeah. We want a good name to live up to. You know, it's Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Give someone a good name to live up to.
Yeah.
So you show them, hey, I'm thankful for these things. I really appreciate that about you. Guess what? I'm going to do that and more next week.
We're going to be talking with Arlene Moore in our next episode, and it's so good. You're not going to want to miss it.
And you can get her book, Making Marriage Easier, in our show notes, familylifetoday.com. There'll be a link there. Go get her book. You know, sometimes we make praying with our spouses so complicated.
And it doesn't have to be. In fact, if you head over to familylife.com/marriageprayers, we have 5 easy prayers to say with your spouse this week.
I'll tell you what, easy is the key word. And that means there's one for every weeknight. It's that easy. Again, familylife.com/marriageprayers.
Family Life Today is a donor-supported production of Family Life, a Crew ministry. helping you pursue the relationships that matter most.